Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Changing time and how it affects us. This weekend, we make the transition from standard to daylight saving time. It's only an hour, but it will take most of us some time to adjust to it. It's a disruption to our circadian rhythm, and the same kind of disruption we experience with jet lag and by people readjusting to and from shift work. Joining me to talk about the disruption and the adjustments is Washington University biology professor Eric Herzog, who has been doing research on this subject. Eric, nice to talk to you again.
Morning, Don.
Well, here we go. What can most of us expect when we lose that hour this weekend?
Well, the first thing you'll hear is everybody complaining about losing an hour of sleep. But we should also be aware of the other potential consequences. They're now well-documented reports showing that following the spring forward, there's actually an increase in the frequency of car accidents for 3 days after Sunday. And there's an increase in the risk of heart attacks. That particular result has been repeated since the original report in 2008, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's been reported at least five more times in independent data sets. We also see a decrease in mood in people's performance on Monday. We see reduced sleep for several days, increased sleep fragmentation. We actually see increased school absences and more people reporting sick for the days following the spring forward.
What about the fall back? Do we have the same kind of things happening at the other end of the year?
That's where things get striking. In fact, where most of the effects I just described will last for 3 to 5 days after the spring forward, in the fall back, yeah, things get better, but they only get better for 1 day. So the decrease in heart attacks, for example, only occurs on Monday, and then we're back to baseline heart attack rates.
Well, what basically is going on?
Well, we think what's happening is that this is related to our body's internal biological circadian clock, a clock that helps us anticipate the daily rise of the sun and fall of the sun. And this biological clock is normally synchronizing you to local time, so that if you live in St. Louis, you're synchronized to St. Louis or Central Time. And when you travel across time zones, you've experienced that transition that takes several days to get you synchronized to a new time zone. For example, if you fly to Paris, something like 8 hours time difference from St. Louis, it'll take you as much as 8 to 14 days to live on Paris time, completely getting a good night's sleep on the new schedule. With the spring forward, it's particularly tricky for two reasons. One is, what we're doing is we're changing the time on the clock, but we're not changing when the sun rises. So we're asking our bodies to adjust to a completely artificial social construction. We're asking ourselves to wake up earlier with no help from anything in the environment. And it's really not clear how people ultimately do adjust to this new schedule. We set our alarms, we change our eating schedules, and we do our best to get sunlight at the right time so that we can somehow advance our schedule by an hour.
Well, it's hard to fathom, however, that something like a minor change, relatively minor change of 1 hour, would cause heart attacks, that kind of physical disruption.
Yeah, it is hard to imagine. I think for that reason, many people dismiss it. I think the truth is that we're always living in a pretty challenging environment, and those folks who have heart attacks are probably already at risk for a heart attack. And in fact, we know that there's a daily rhythm in the risk for heart attacks. The vast majority of heart attacks occur in the early morning hours, just before or just after waking up, which is probably for our heart the most stressful time, from having gone lying down for many hours to having to get up and move blood around and anticipate the demands of a workday. And so this additional stress of having to shift your schedule seems to be enough to increase the risk for heart attack even beyond what we're already experiencing.
Somewhere in my notes, I saw something indicating that people who are involved in shift work, constant shifting of the clock for them, that they're at a greater risk for cancer. Some even have called that shifting a carcinogen.
That's right. The World Health Organization lists shift work as a potential carcinogen based upon, for example, a large study of nurses working shifting schedules. And there they found an increased risk correlation with breast cancer. Shift work is a pretty general term, and we always have to be careful about what we mean by that. There are lots of people who don't work a regular schedule. So, for example, folks who might work the day shift for 2 weeks, then the evening shift for 2 weeks, and then the night shift for 2 weeks. That's a standard shift work schedule. And you might be shifting in one particular direction, like every 2 weeks you go earlier. That seems to be a schedule that's particularly hard for the human body to do. Advancing is harder than delaying for reasons that are still not clear. And that ties back to your original question, why is it harder to spring forward than to fall back? For reasons that are not totally clear, it's harder for humans to advance, to get up earlier, than it is for us to shift and delay our schedule. So flying east is harder for most people than flying west when we're traveling across time zones.
The things that you've just mentioned about shift work are kind of scary. I mean, there are probably a lot of people listening right now who have that kind of a schedule. Is there anything they could do, napping, for instance, or something like that, to lessen the risk?
It's a great question. It's an area of very active research because there are so many different kinds of people and so many different kinds of shift schedules. So there are, in fact, people who do quite well on some shift schedules because of how they're built. They're different than other people. So let me give you an example. Some people are naturally early birds. They like to wake up early, and they're perfectly happy to work the early morning shift. Think of your high school teacher. Contrast them with the high school student who really has a very hard time getting up early and going to school for an 8 a.m. start time. And so if we could think about scheduling people's work according to their biology, we might be able to reduce some of that risk.
All right. Well, that's certainly good to know. I'm guessing we'll be comforting to folks who are listening. Going back to daylight saving time and the risks that come with it, is it worth it? Is daylight saving time worth it to have people go through this?
It's a great question and a tough one. You know, the history of daylight savings time is interesting. I think it started in the early 1900s in Britain, and people actually credit Benjamin Franklin for having come up with the idea for having daylight saving time in the spring going forward. And the goals were, as I understand it, were to save energy. They actually adopted it in Britain in part to try and lower energy costs because of the war, the World War I. There was also the argument that it was going to help improve physical well-being, and they actually tied it to people will be less likely to go to the pub and drink in the evenings. And they would be more likely to go outside and get some exercise and recreate in the afternoons while there was still light. And the main reason that it was promoted at the time was that it was going to help the military train in the daylight hours. So somehow shifting our schedule to better match the light schedule outside made good sense at the time. But in reality now, if you look around the world, there are 70 countries or so that observe daylight savings time. They're almost all in the higher latitudes because they experience longer days in the summer and shorter days in the winter, and so they're trying to somehow optimize our work schedule to the changing environment. What's striking about this is it affects like 25% of the people on the planet, so a lot of people, billions of people. And yet, when you think about, just take the state of Missouri as an example. We're in the central time zone, but the people on the eastern edge of the state will experience the sun rising about an hour earlier than the people on the western edge of the state. So forcing us all to shift our schedule by 1 hour, artificially by shifting the clock on the wall, doesn't really solve the problem that the sun's going to rise an hour later on the western edge of the time zone. And so daylight saving time is an attempt to solve all these problems of saving energy, getting people outside, drinking less alcohol. But the evidence now is that it really doesn't do that because of the way we work and the way we actually deliver our energy now. It's pretty clear that daylight savings time is not really solving the problems it's set out to solve.
There is a move afoot, and I'll need a quick answer to this question. There is a move afoot now to put the entire world on a single time.
Yeah, that would be very challenging. So they do this, for example, in China, where everybody is on a single time in one time zone. Is that what you mean, Don?
Yes, a single time zone like that. I'll tell you what, if we can wait to answer that question, because I think it's going to involve more of a response than we have time for,
sure.
We'll come back to that. We'll be back with Professor Eric Herzog of Washington University and our discussion about circadian rhythm in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation now with Professor Eric Herzog of Washington University. We're talking about circadian rhythms and how we'll be affected by daylight saving time when it goes into effect this weekend. Erica, let's pick up where we left off with regard to a single worldwide time zone and your thoughts about that.
Right. So that's, in a sense, been tried in China, where they have a single time zone over many thousands of miles. East to west, and you can imagine that that's a difficult thing for them to do. The people in the far east would experience the sun rising, let's say, at 8 a.m., and the people in the far west would see the sun rising many hours later. I think it's about 8 hours from the furthest east to the furthest west for the sun to rise. So the sun would actually be rising at something like 4 p.m. For the people in western China. It works out there okay because there aren't that many people that live in western China. But for the rest of the world, it would be pretty difficult. And the reason we've gone to time zones really dates back to when trains were traveling across many time zones at much faster than people could travel before. And they realized it was more convenient to have the time zones adjusted as we traveled west to accommodate for the time it takes for the sun to travel, to rise as we move west.
Well, we have an email here along these lines. Most interesting proposal, I think. Bob writes, in the spring, instead of robbing an hour of sleep, the clock should jump from 4 to 5 p.m. so we could all go home earlier. Seriously, there would be many more pluses than minuses to this.
And how would that not affect the same time in the morning would be the question.
Uh-huh.
Right? So if we were to steal an hour in the afternoon, we also have to steal an hour in the morning.
Right. You got to pay the piper at some point, huh?
Yeah.
Catherine emails, can you ask Dr. Herzog if using or taking melatonin is useful in helping adjust to time change? If so, do you have a suggestion for how to use this regarding timing and dosage and whether he knows how it affects children and teens?
That's a great question. So there's actually a lot of literature on the effects of melatonin on human sleep and human circadian rhythms. And what's striking about it is that melatonin works on some people, but not all people. And this probably has, again, to do with differences between us. So I caution anybody who wants to do this that they're doing an experiment on themselves. Melatonin is available through the health food section in the grocery store. It's not a regulated product.
We have Lonnie emailing. Ask your guest to elaborate on adjustment to shift work schedules. My personal work schedule requires me to move from day shift to night shift to evening shift every 9 days. These are 8-hour shifts. Which rotation would be better in this case? Days to nights or to evenings or days to evenings to nights?
Ah, good. It's a good question, and it actually depends on Lana's personal preference. So if Lana thinks that she's an early morning person, for example, on her free days, her weekend days when she's not working, That suggests that her clock actually prefers to advance, that is, go earlier. If she's instead a late night person, she tends to want to stay up late and sleep in the mornings. That suggests she's probably, like most of us, more comfortable with delaying our schedules. So a very small fraction of people will prefer to advance, and the vast majority will prefer to delay their schedules. So go from morning shifts to afternoon shifts to evening shifts. Regardless, the most important thing we have to remember if we're on shift work is that the best thing for our body and for our long-term health is to really do our best to live on that schedule and not cheat on our free days. So it's very hard for shift workers when they're not working to continue to live on their shift. Instead, if you're on the evening shift and the weekend comes, you'll want to get up early with your family and have fun with your family. And that really does start to shift your clock back to another schedule that's not compatible with your shift work. So many shift workers will complain of tiredness on the job. They'll show signs of increased body weight and even be at risk for things like diabetes and cancer, like you heard earlier.
Some of us are affected more than others by all of this, I assume. Is that correct? And if so, why?
That's right. So the answer in its simplest form is probably genetics. Your sleep schedule is in part determined by your mom and your dad. So I like to tell this to teenagers. If your parents are complaining about your sleep schedule, you can remind them that you inherited the genes from them. And so it is normal for us to have a schedule that's not that different than what we inherited from our parents. So some people are naturally inclined to stay up later at night, and you can know this about yourself if this is what you do when you're on vacation. And some people are actually naturally shorter sleepers. So the amount of sleep and when you sleep are two separate things, and they seem to be regulated by different genetic processes. And so some people who sleep less can get by on less sleep, and they do better on shift work schedules. So it's a tough question to answer in specific, but at least in part, it's due to genetics. Yeah.
So there really are day people and night people.
There really are day people and night people. Let me give you a specific example. There's a family in Utah that's been studied. They have a mutation in one gene. It's called the period 2 gene. And a single small mutation in that gene that just changes one amino acid in the protein that the gene makes causes these people to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and go to sleep at 7 o'clock at night. If you take that same gene and put it into mice or into fruit flies, you again get an early bird mouse or an early bird fruit fly. Huh.
I'll be darned. Well, in the time we have left, I very briefly want to have you mention teenagers and sleep, because I know there's a move afoot now to have kids start school later because they're not getting enough sleep.
That's right. And I want to make sure that everybody's aware of the fact that sleep is a biological need, and we can't really oversleep. We're inclined to sleep until we've gotten what our body needs. And so teenagers, as many of us know, want to stay up later. They have a hard time going to bed at night when we tell them to go to bed. And then they want to sleep in the morning. And that is actually the norm for someone of their age. And so adolescents will tend to be late chronotypes. And so there's this movement afoot to acknowledge that and just shift the time when school starts. So have school hours be the same number of hours per day, but just start the school schedule later. And where that's been done in the United States and in other countries, they've seen improved test scores, improved attendance, and, in fact, happier teachers.
Well, you know, I have to stop you there, Dr. Herzog. Thanks so much for being with us. This has been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Don.
You.